Coming up on Golf Today, oh, captain, my captain, gentleman Jim Furyk tabbed as U.S. President's Cup captain for 2024. We'll chat lessons learned from Paris. How do you beat Mike Weir in Canada? And how did that whole Ryder Cup task force work out? And let's take a trip to Pebble Beach. That's where we'll find USGA CEO Mike Wan on Media Day talking distance and the chase for the U.S. Women's Open. And she is one of the most notable players in the game over the last two decades. Michelle Wee West says hello. What is her plan ahead of the national championship at Pebble? Always nice to see Weezy on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Golf Today on a Tuesday. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week magazine. Yesterday we were in Los Angeles for quite a bit, U.S. Open Media Day. We're hopping on the 101. We're heading north, my friend. A little stop in Ventura, Santa Barbara, maybe Pismo Beach. We're making our way to Pebble.
And one thing that stays the same, though, yesterday we spent a lot of time, Damon, talking about team golf with the International Crown on the LPGA Tour this week. We're going to talk about that again today. But now we're talking about some men's team golf as well.
Indeed. Jim Furyk is in the news. A big day for him. Let's go back first, because Furyk has been a notable and visible presence in the game for nearly three decades. The high point, of course, 20 years ago, won that U.S. Open at Olympia Fields outside of Chicago. Nice hug with his caddy, Fluff. It was a three-shot win on Father's Day. Jim's father and coach, Mike, was there. You see him there in the background with the glasses just behind Jim there. Jim really cemented himself as one of the best players of his generation. Another key milepost in his career, of course, being the U.S. Ryder Cup captain in 2018 in Paris. Turned out to be a tough week for the Americans. They fell to Europe 17.5 to 10.5. Well, Jim gets another bite of the apple today, so to speak, named captain for Team USA in the 2024 President's Cup, which will take place in September of next year at Royal Montreal Golf Club in Canada, as we see the news there on Twitter from the President's Cup handle. How about the bio? I would say it is robust. 17 wins in his career, including that U.S. Open. Shot 59 in the second round of the 2013 BMW. Shot 58 in the fourth round of the 2016 Travelers. Of course, was a Ryder Cup captain. First player on tour to shoot 58 and card two sub-60 rounds. And the captain joins us now. Jim, congratulations. The more you talk to players who have captained, who have played in these teams, they say there are events not to be missed, like summer camp without the Pinewood Derby. Why is this a role you wanted to take on?
It's an honor. I've enjoyed playing in the President's Cups, the Ryder Cups, my whole career. It was always at the top of my list for goals at the start of every season. And then, as that playing career starts to drift off, being a vice captain and a captain is really just, I love being around the team. I love the opportunity to be able to lead this team and get another opportunity. I had it in 2018 at the Ryder Cup and now in 24 for the President's Cup. So just super excited, and it was a great call to get.
Does it feel a little bit like destiny here? Jim, you and Mike Weir were both born on the very same day. You won your majors in the same year. Now you're captain in the American team against Mike's international team in his home country. It seems kind of preordained here.
Well, I think when you're thinking of a President's Cup in Canada, you have to pick Mike Weir, right? That's the easy choice. But Weirzy and I have been friends for a long time. And as you mentioned, the same birthdays, similar careers, similar styles of play. I'm looking forward to it. He's a good man and a friend. And I'm happy that we get to do this together.
Well, you were on the victorious team back in 2007 in Canada. What's going to be the biggest challenge of beating a Mike Weir-led team in Canada?
Well, I expect a lot of competition. The international teams had two pretty good showings. U.S. had to come back in Australia 3 years ago. The matches were pretty close in Charlotte and got really tight there on Sunday for a while at singles. So, I think really it'll be a lot of the crowd, right? We're on an away match, and Canadian fans are great sporting fans. They love their golf, and I can remember Mike and Tiger kind of having an epic singles match, and anyone that was on the course that day knew exactly where the Woods Weir match was because of the crowd, the cheering, the noise. So I think a lot of it's just most difficult. It's a great golf course, a difficult golf course, but probably, you know, being away and having 99% of the folks rooting against you and rooting for the international squad. That'll be the toughest part.
Jim, you mentioned 2018. You know, I've covered you in victory and defeat, spoke to you after you shot 58 in Connecticut. How much does that loss in 2018 still stay with you in Paris compared to maybe losing in a playoff or losing a PGA Tour event?
No, it definitely it's always difficult. Losing's never easy. I think for all of us, anyone that's a good player, I think you remember the losses. And the pain of losing is usually a lot tougher than the thrill of victory, if that makes sense. So I remember the losses throughout my career a lot more than the wins, and that one sticks with me. Can't go back and change it now, but obviously a disappointment. But also had a lot of good memories from that team and the 12 guys, and a lot of love for the effort they put in.
You can't go back and change it, Jim, but is there anything you took away from that week in terms of the captaincy or strategy that you're going to put into practice for the President's Cup that you think you wouldn't have known had it not been for that pain back in 2018?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the question that I got asked a lot through like the 2019 year in that season, you know, if you had the chance, would you go back and do anything differently? And I, the question kind of made me laugh because you'd have to be pretty darn arrogant to say, nope, you know, I do everything the exact same. And, hindsight's 2020. There's things that I would have done differently. And surely I think there was a lot of positives from the week as well. But, I'll take a lot from 18, 19. You know, every year that we've played, we kind of grow as an American team. And I'll learn some lessons from 18 that I'll apply in 24. Absolutely.
Since the task force and the Ryder Cup situation came up almost a decade ago now, Jim, we've seen a kind of a core group of guys who've been charged with developing some kind of consistent approach from one event to another for Team USA over the years. It's been you, Stricker, Davis, Love. And I know this question's easier to ask than it is to answer, but when do we see the next generation of leaders move into these roles?
Yeah, well, that's probably not a question for me. I'm not the one selecting the captains, but from the PGA of America side or from the PGA Tour side, I think we're going to see some fresh blood. I think certainly Zach Johnson, probably served as an assistant captain a couple times and now the captain of the U.S. team in Rome. So, there's a little bit of a fresh look and a guy surely that knows all of us very well from Strick to Davis to myself to Tiger. He's been able to serve on a number of those teams. But, I think that's starting the process and going forward. You're going to see that happen more and more. But, the goal for us and what we talked a lot in that task force meeting the very first time was really just trying to provide some symmetry from year to year. And the good news for us is we do get a Ryder Cup and a President's Cup every year. And so just trying to provide for the players that are fortunate enough, that are good enough to make those teams each and every year, those teams should look somewhat similar, right? Every captain's going to have their own twist and their own style, but there should be a lot of symmetry in those teams that basically, makes those players comfortable, gives them the best opportunities to succeed.
Those were some tough days in 2014 at the end of that Ryder Cup. The task force was born, lampooned in some circles, mostly in Europe. I remember Lee Westwood kind of making fun of the name. Has the task force been successful in your estimation?
It definitely was not. I would probably have to agree with Lee. Probably not the greatest name ever chosen from the task force, but it was no different than what Europe had done in the past, kind of getting a bunch of minds together, a lot of veteran players and captains, and what can we do to make this better in the future? I think it has been successful. I think, in order for going to the Ryder Cup side, I think in order for the U.S. to take the next step, that team's going to have to win on foreign soil, which we haven't done in Europe for, close to 30 years, possibly. So in order for the U.S. team to be, to be successful, for maybe to look back and say the task force was a success, I think it was. I think we've improved upon the team. We've had a little bit more consistency and symmetry throughout the years. But in order for that team to take the next step, it'll be surely winning on European soil.
Jim, Zach has faced a lot of questions about his team this year about whether or not captain's picks may go to guys who now play on the LIV Golf Circuit. Since the PGA Tour owns the President's Cup, it would seem unlikely that that question is going to be as prevalent next year in your team. Do you think it's entirely off the table as a point of discussion as far as the President's Cup goes?
My understanding for both teams, whether it's Mike Weir or myself, it is, as you mentioned, it's a PGA Tour event. So if a player is not qualified to play in a PGA Tour event, they won't be qualified to play in the President's Cup. Again, something that's out of my hands, but I think you kind of knew it when you asked the question that would probably be the answer.
Though you mostly play on PGA Tour champions these days, Jim, in what ways have you made connected to the younger generation?
it's amazing. Damon, you wake up one day and all of a sudden you're old enough to be everyone's father. So I played at the RBC Heritage this year. There was quite a few new faces, folks that I tried to meet up with. It just happens. I think I have a great relationship with a lot of the veterans of those President's Cup and Ryder Cup teams. Not only did I play alongside of them on some of those teams, but also have been, a captain or a vice captain for many of them. But there's going to be a bunch of young players and new faces, and I love that. I think I need to probably be on tour a little bit here and there and make myself available. I want to see these guys you can bet I'm going to be paying a lot of attention to the PGA Tour for the next 15 months and watching a lot of golf.
Well, I know you're excited, Jim, and Canada's been very good to you, by the way. A couple of wins on the Canadian Open. So congratulations, Jim. Look forward to speaking to you down the road.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Great to have the captain. Willis, what do you think? We're in this kind of era of Stricker and Davis and Zach and Jim and rinse and repeat. Are you okay with the pick?
It's definitely a revolving door we've seen now since the setup of the task force and the guys who have come out of it. And the thing about Jim Furyk is he's the right choice as captain. He's a man of unimpeachable character. He's eminently qualified, widely respected everywhere in the game. But at a certain point, we've got to start seeing new leadership in this game. And we're not seeing that much of it. I mean, he just mentioned Zach Johnson as the Ryder Cup captain, having served as a vice president in the past. Well, Zach's first two choices as his vice captains for the Ryder Cup were Davis Love and Steve Stricker. So the revolving doors is going around again. The only new name that we've seen brought in recently was in the last President's Cup when Webb Simpson served as vice captain. What I suspect you're going to see is vice captains get added who, particularly in the Ryder Cup, perhaps in the President's Cup as well, who are not qualified, whose games are slightly on the wane and aren't likely to make the team or justify a captain's pick. And then you might start to see that new generation come in. But it's sorely overdue at this point.
It's a very safe pick. I mean, Jim Furyk is like a mattress or your favorite pair of jeans, a safe, comfortable, dependable, not going to go AWOL, not going to be a lot of drama around this team, I would imagine. But I do think that consistency was something that was asked for, and I think we're seeing that. But you have to wonder, when will that next generation be prepared to step in and lead?
And when you start to keep seeing results the way the American team has over the last few years, then where's the incentive to actually change anything out here? Well, we have a pretty robust day coming up here in golf today. That includes three major champions here in Paula Creamer, Minji Lee, and Michelle Wee West. But coming up next, the CEO of the USGA joins us. Mike Wan is beaming in from Pebble Beach, where Media Day is underway for the US Women's Open. We talk to Mike right after this break.
Back on golf today. Last year, the U.S. Women's Open was contested at Pine Needles, where Minji Lee took home the title by four shots, really ran away with it. In the process, collected $1.8 million, the largest paycheck in women's golf. And today, the USGA hosting Media Day at beautiful Pebble Beach. This year, the U.S. Women's Open will take place there July 6th. Through the 9th, and we cannot wait for the national championship. Some big news today reported by our friend from Golf Week, the senior writer Beth Ann Nichols. The U.S. Women's Open at Pebble will be first women's event to feature ShotLink, the scoring system. So a lot of detailed numbers will be available, not just to the players, but the fans as well. And with that, Mike Wan, the CEO of the USGA, joins us now from Pebble. Mike, it's great to see you. You know, in your past role as LPGA commissioner, you always talked about having the women play the biggest stages under the brightest light, so to speak. What's it like for you knowing what's coming for the best women in the game at Pebble in July?
Yeah, good memory, Damon. I mean, I spent 12 years searching for the biggest stages possible, the ones that would break through, not just big for women in golf, but big for women in sport. And man, as this is as big as they get. This, in my opinion, is the pinnacle of U.S. golf here at Pebble Beach. And, you know, talk about this when you think about big stages, Damon and Eamon. We're talking about Thursday, 6 to 11 p.m., so prime time on the East Coast. And then on the weekends, 3 to 9 p.m., both days, Saturday and Sunday, on NBC. I think the longest continuous NBC network coverage for a women's event, certainly the most primetime coverage for a women's event ever. Extended live from hours, we're going to have 26 hours of live from coverage the week of the U.S. Women's Open, 8 hours a day on Tuesday and Wednesday. And for the first time ever, we've had our docuseries about the path to the U.S. Open on the men's side, but this is the first time we're going to have a three-part docuseries called The Path to Pebble over the course of the week before, week of, and the week after the U.S. Women's Open. We'll really talk about the journeys of players to get here and play on a stage this big. So while it's super exciting for us at the USGA, it's super exciting for the LPGA, and I know Pebble is pumped. I can tell you from the feeling around here, I want to say thank you to your company as well for making this stage as big as you're making it and making sure that fans can watch this incredible moment on the biggest possible platform.
Mike, for a long time, the level of respect accorded women's golf was somewhat evident in some of the courses that held major championships. That's changed more so in recent years, particularly with Pebble this year. Yesterday, you were down at LACC, where the Men's Open is this year, and they've already committed to hosting a Women's Open in the future. Is that a conversation you're now encouraging, that the best venues that want to host Men's Opens be equally open to the possibility of having a Women's Open?
100%. But I will tell you an interesting story, Eamon, and I had nothing to do with it. I'm just sharing kind of as it was told me. I remember when Mike Davis told me that he had called Heidi Ueberroth at Pebble Beach and said, you know, would you please host one U.S. Women's Open? And she said, I'm not interested in one U.S. Open, one U.S. Women's Open. I'm interested in four. And those are the kind of game-changing moments that I think send a message to everybody else at the superstar stage. So, of course, we're excited about being here this summer for Pebble, but we've got four of these coming up in the years ahead, and that's the kind of commitment that we're seeing from others. And it takes people like Pebble and some of the others to be the leaders, and others have and will continue to follow. So, yeah, this is an exciting time. Damon's right. I spent 12 years of my life chasing big stages, and I'm so excited about the stages we're going to deliver to the best women in the world, not just this summer, but for the near and distant future that we've announced already.
Well, Mike, the USGA conducts championships all over the country from sea to shining sea, but what are the benefits of West Coast major championships in particular? I'm from LA. I live on the East Coast. There's something about seeing the sun setting on the West Coast when you're, you know, maybe sometimes freezing your tuchus off on the East Coast and seeing those pretty pictures from out West.
Yeah, you know, Damon, if you think about it, you know, we all, as golf fans, we get to watch golf in sort of our allotted window, our 3 to 6, 3 to 7 East Coast window. And that's great. It's an incredible opportunity for golf to be played. But every once in a while, we break into the prime time window. And if you think about LACC, you're going to be able to turn on your TV at noon on NBC and turn it off at 11 p.m. So we're going to be on all day and right into the prime time hours at night. If you think about the women's game here at Pebble Beach, turn on your TV at 3 p.m. on the East Coast, and it won't go off until 9 p.m. So, you know, we're not just going to play in a core golf window. We're going to play in the prime time windows, and that's an incredible opportunity for the women, incredible showcase for the USGA, and no better place to provide that showcase than Pebble, where I'm not sure it gets any better than this.
There was a lot of attention last year at Pine Needles, Mike, on the ProMedica sponsorship, on the size of the purse, guaranteeing the largest first-place prize in the history of women's golf. Obviously, ProMedica has been released from that due to commercial headwinds that the company has faced. Where are you in the process of finding a replacement presenting sponsor?
Yeah, it's a good point, Eamon. We did a lot of lifting together, us and ProMedica. The good news is we're going to keep right on lifting. I think the good news in terms of how we separated with ProMedica, we understood that they faced some business challenges that nobody saw coming, most of all them. And so creating a positive outcome both for them and for us was wise. But that separation agreement gave us not only the time, but the reassurance to keep right on going on this path of elevation. To be honest with you, Eamon, we're not in a real rush. We don't have to hurry to find a presenting sponsor. I do think we've already started numerous conversations. Some of them are pretty deep. But as I've told my team, I don't care if it takes a year, 3 years, or 10 years. We know there's a real benefit in finding the right partner to help pushing this thing to the next level. But I think you're going to see not only in the near future, but starting this summer, we're not shy. We're not shy about pushing the places we play. We're not shy about pushing the purpose and the impact when we do play. And we're not shy about pushing the purses. So I think you'll see even as early as this summer, all three of those things will continue to elevate.
So when you're in that process that's ongoing, Mike, to find that commercial partner, will the USGA subsidize the purse to make sure that it doesn't decline in any respect?
We're not going to have any purse decline, if that's what your question was, Eamon. I think if your expectation is flat purse, we might surprise you too. So, yeah, we feel pretty confident that the road we laid out about a year and a half ago, and we talked about what the U.S. Women's Open was going to look like over the next decade. There's been no rerouting of that route. We're on the same route, and we're as aggressive and as positive about that as we were before.
Mike, you're a passionate guy. End of March, if I recall, you called into SiriusXM and had a pretty robust discussion with Michael Breed about distance, and you said you didn't want to hinder advancements and athleticism, but you also didn't want golf courses buying 17 acres more of land and for Rory McIlroy's kids to be hitting it, you know, hither and yon. Why were you compelled to make that point to our good buddy Michael Breed?
Yeah, probably not my greatest move in my career, but I was actually driving to a doctor's appointment, so I was driving later in the day. I think I must drive in early in the morning because I don't catch Breeder's show as often as I'd like, but I was driving and they were talking about distance and the MLR ball, and they had it about 50% right, and it was kind of driving me crazy. And they were saying, like, why does the USGA not like the fact that Rory McIlroy can drive a par four? And I just couldn't help myself. And I know, unfortunately, I know Breeder's number. It's stored in my phone somewhere. So I called in, with about 3 minutes before my doctor's appointment, just to try to clarify some of the things between the two. I've enjoyed these notice and comment feedback periods, but sometimes people just sort of get the message wrong. And as you know me, both of you guys know me, it's difficult for me to be in a fly on the wall when I think the wrong information is being shared. So probably won't be the last phone call I'll ever make into a radio show, but I'm sure my team would like it to be a little less frequent.
It is the feedback period, as you mentioned. What are you hearing so far?
Yeah, it's a mix, Damon. I mean, sometimes it's almost humorous when I wake up in the morning and turn on my computer and get these, really passionate emails about, please don't stop. You know, and I know we should have done this a long time ago, and we'll hear from, different people within the industry. And then two emails later, I'll go, please stop. Why are you messing with distance at all? So it's a hot topic. I don't doubt that. And I think, change is hard no matter who change hits, and the people that are most affected by change are the most, reactive to it. But it's a long process. We've been working on this since 2018. I think the only, I said many times, the only solution to kind of what's happening long term, and what I mean is long term over getting here and long term going forward, the only solution that's not responsible is no solution. So we got to stay open to the different ways. We've changed quite a bit a year ago from where we are today based on real quality industry feedback. So if I was talking to a year ago, I'm not sure I would have been saying that we're going to make a bunch of change, but I thought the quality feedback we got a year ago was sound and solid, and we tried to incorporate that feedback into the process we've laid out today. I'm sure we'll have more changes. But like I said, I feel a responsibility to make sure the game is better for the generations that follow us, and we don't leave them a problem that we saw but simply didn't have the guts to address. So how exactly we address it, still work to be done. But will we address it? I think between us and the RNA, we're as committed as we've ever been, despite we've known from the beginning that this wouldn't be easy. But sometimes doing the right thing isn't the easy thing.
There's one area of technology I think everyone could embrace here, Mike. I want to talk about this ShotLink news that it will be used at this US Women's Open at Pebble Beach. How significant is it that finally analysis of women's golf doesn't have to be anecdotal about what we've heard, that it's actually going to be based in statistical analysis in the same way that the men's game is day in, day out?
Well, two things, Eamon. I think even the viewing experience gets enhanced immediately. So when we can talk about real shot like that, and what I mean by viewing, I don't care if you're streaming, if you're watching it on our app, and you just want to see the exact distances people are hitting and what their percentages are from hitting in from that distance, it actually makes the viewing experience better. It makes the live from experience better when you can bring some of the data in. And then I think you're right, Eamon. For the longest time, the women's golf game data just stopped at a pretty short period. And what we've become really accustomed to on the men's game, we couldn't make the same comparisons on the women's game. And I think some non-followers of women's golf are going to be floored with the talent level, especially the short game talent level of these players. So I'm excited about getting started. I'll admit to you, we got to catch up from the data perspective, but we will, and we will quickly.
All looking forward to July and the U.S. Women's Open at Pebble Beach. You probably heard I finished T2 there at the Pier Insurance last year, Mike. But thanks for the time today. Enjoy media day.
I just walked by your T2 trophy. It still looks awesome.
Thanks, my friend.
Back on Golf Today Sunday, Tony Finau adopting that Mamba mentality that he has talked about in years past. Final round, 66 to win the Mexico Open by 3 over Jon Rahm. The win marked his 6th PGA Tour title and 4th in his last 18 starts. Greatness is greedy. Finau has now earned multiple victories in back-to-back seasons for the first time in his career. And yes, part of the field designated event this week's PGA Tour stop, the Wells Fargo Championship Quail Hollow Club. You can catch live first-round coverage Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern time, right here on Golf Channel. And a fantastic field, notable. Practically everybody is notable, from Cantlay to Finau, Fitzpatrick. Ricky Fowler got his first PGA Tour win at Quail Hollow, as did Max Homa. Victor Hovland, a very popular pick. Rory McIlroy has made it a personal playground as well. Just a wonderful field in Charlotte.
Speaking of Rory McIlroy, let's get a check on this date in golf history. Back in 2010, McIlroy shot a final round 62 at Quail Hollow, and that won the Wells Fargo Championship for the first time, and earned his first career PGA Tour victory just 2 days before his 21st birthday. As you mentioned, Damon, Quail Hollow has been happy hunting ground for Rory McIlroy over the years at the Wells Fargo Championship. 11 starts, 3 victories, most recently 2 years ago, 2021, and also a runner-up finish in there, 9 top tens in those 11 starts. And we're going to head down now to the Quail Hollow Club in Charlotte, North Carolina, bring in Todd Lewis. Todd, you had a chance to catch up with Rory McIlroy earlier.
Yeah, it did, and there's a lot of news surrounding Rory McIlroy. Of course, the last time we saw Rory, he was competing at the Masters. He missed the cut at Augusta National, which was surprising because he felt very prepared going into that major championship. But what was equally surprising is the fact that Rory McIlroy took the following week off, which was the RBC Heritage, a designated event. It was his second designated event he missed on the PGA Tour this year. So it's been, well, roughly a month that Rory McIlroy has been away from high-level competition, but he's back out here on the PGA Tour. And I did catch up with Rory today while playing a practice round, and I asked him why it was important for him to step away from the tour.
A needed break for me. Just, I think, obviously after the disappointment of Augusta, and then it's been a pretty taxing 12 months mentally, so it was nice to just try to disconnect a little bit and get away from it. But you know, it's nice to come back and feel refreshed, and you know, I think we're on a pretty busy run here from now until after the playoffs, so you know, I'm excited to get going.
Mentally and emotionally, was it taxing on you that warranted the break?
I think just you know, a combination of a few things, and I think just after, you know, the disappointment of Augusta and how I played there, it was just more for my, you know, mental and emotional well-being. I just needed to be at home for those few weeks. And, you know, but as I said, looking forward to getting back at it this week.
What did that break do for you?
I don't know. I think I'm in a bit of a better headspace than I was. You know, that run up to Augusta is always, you know, it's always a stressful enough couple of weeks, just trying to make sure everything's in the right order, and making sure your game's in good shape. And, you know, I think for me it was a nice reset, because I still had to realize that there's 3 more majors this year. There's a ton left to play for. You know, so I guess it was a little bit like not a new beginning in a way, but it was like, okay, I've played great golf up until then, you know, but sort of need to leave the last 12 months in the rear view mirror and focus on what's ahead of me. And, you know, I think the last 3 weeks has helped me sort of gain that perspective and put me back on the right track.
All right, so an equipment change for Rory McIlroy. Well, everything old is new again for him. You remember he played the WGC Dell Technologies Match Play and the Masters with a replica from his 2011 major championship victory at the U.S. Open replica putter then, but that customized putter has now been replaced with the one that he was using, which is a mallet-style putter. He said, I had my best ever putting year on tour last year, so no need to throw the baby out with the bathwater. So a familiar putter back in the hands of Rory McIlroy as he competes here for the Wells Fargo Championship. Guys.
Todd, speaking of change, what's the latest with Patrick Cantlay? I understand he might have a new caddy this week.
There's no might about it. Big news coming out of the Patrick Cantlay camp, and that is Joe LaCava, who has been the longtime caddy for Tiger Woods since 2011, is now on the bag for Patrick Cantlay in a full-time basis. Patrick Cantlay and Joe LaCava had a conversation about the two working together, and LaCava reached out to Tiger Woods, and Tiger Woods gave his blessing to Joe LaCava to be on the bag for Patrick Cantlay again. On a full-time basis, this is not a one-off. Now, Mark Steinberg is here on site in Charlotte. Of course, Steinberg is the longtime agent for Tiger Woods, and he said to me that Tiger is kind of like a brother to Joe LaCava. He's going to be out for a while, Tiger will, and when he comes back, it's going to be on a limited schedule, and Joe simply wants to work out here on the PGA Tour, and why not align himself with one of the best players on the planet and Patrick Cantlay. Now, what does that say about Tiger Woods now that Joe LaCava is working for Cantlay? Well, Steinberg said, well, the surgery was a success in regards to his ankle. Now it's a matter of resting, rehabbing, and waiting for the surgery to take in regards to when he will be coming back to compete out here on the world's biggest stage. I asked him, does that mean if he comes back out and competes, is LaCava back on the bag? And he said, you kind of see that not happening because Patrick Cantlay now has LaCava on the bag for him full time, but we shall see. But Joe LaCava making some news today, parting ways with Tiger Woods. It was an amicable split and working with Patrick Cantlay now. Guys?
Busy newsy Tuesday in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thank you very much, T. Lou. Where do you want to start, Rory? I mean, the burden of expectations, the weight of that run-up to Augusta and the need to exhale and step away from the game after missing the cut.
Yeah, he still looked a little bit kind of, for want of a better term, tired there.
Sure.
As well, as though everything that's gone on over the last year, not just the actual playing of golf at an elite level, but the constant advocacy of the PGA Tour in the civil war that's going on, the time that's given over to board meetings and all-day phone calls, that kind of stuff. I think it had taken its toll. And as he pointed out, the run-up to Augusta National is a particularly fraught time for him because it's the one event that he hasn't won to complete the career Grand Slam. And it was noteworthy there when he said to Todd, you know, we're into a busy stretch now all the way through the playoffs. Well, there's a long way to go to the playoffs. And that does give you some sense of the demands that are going to be on Rory McIlroy's time competitively. And even from a home life standpoint, you're just constantly going to be on the road and challenging for big titles from now through Labor Day. And then you start to move into the European run-up to the Ryder Cup after that as well. So it is a busy time. I'm not at least a bit surprised that he said he needed some time off to kind of collect his thoughts and start afresh.
Yeah, we've been congratulating Rory on his ability to compartmentalize and juggle a lot of different balls and wear a lot of different hats as a player, as an ambassador, as a spokesperson, as a dad and husband. And it just seems like...
That's a lot of jobs.
It's a lot
right
of
there.
Jobs, especially when the focus is a major championship and the narrow kind of mindset that you have to win a green jacket, especially not just a green jacket for him, but to complete the career Grand Slam and climb that mountain. It just seemed like there was just too many balls in the air, if I can finish with my little nutty analogy.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter if you're a public figure or not. Everyone is entitled to take a week off work. Everyone's entitled to crawl into a hole for a few weeks if they want, particularly if you're living a high-profile, high-stress world. So I don't necessarily think Rory McIlroy owes an excuse to anyone as to why he wasn't there. There's always going to be the curiosity why he wasn't at the RBC Heritage, but he doesn't owe anyone an explanation for taking a week off work for sure.
I agree with that. It's going to be fascinating to see him kind of work his way out of what seemed to be like a little bit of a funky. He seemed a little bit quiet, reflective in that chat with Todd Lewis. But listen, the talent will find a way, I believe, to land on its feet, especially if things can get a little simpler for Rory and maybe a little quieter in this part of the year compared to February, March, in the early part of April.
Well, he's not going to find a more comfortable environment to rejoin the PGA Tour than Quail Hollow. Well, from one 2014 major winner in Rory McIlroy to another, Michelle Wee West. She's going to join us from Pebble Beach right after this quick break.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Back on Golf Today, let's continue to check in on Pebble Beach as the USGA Media Day is today ahead of the 78th U.S. Women's Open, which will be contested July 6th through the 9th. Typically a very good time of year on the Monterey Peninsula. Now, sticking with the U.S. Women's Open, let's flash back to 2014. Pioneers number two, Michelle Wee West, beat Stacey Lewis by two shots, made that cold-blooded birdie at 17, par 18 to win her major, the national championship, the tournament she has said she wanted to win the most. Take a look at the bio. You see that national championship, five career LPGA Tour wins, five-time member of the U.S. Solheim Cup team, and nearly made the cut at a PGA Tour event at the age of 14. And great to have Wheezy with us on this Tuesday. In your busy life of motherhood and business, you circled this U.S. Women's Open at Pebble Beach as a must-play. Why was this an event you absolutely could not miss?
I mean, it's Pebble. It speaks for itself. I love the USGA. We have such a long history together, and it's an organization that means so much to me, and the championship that means so much to me. And, you know, just being able to be here, be back in the Bay Area, it's just incredible to have a chance to play here.
Michelle, you won this championship at one of America's most iconic courses in Pinehurst number two. How much value does it add to a championship to see it competed for on the greatest American golf courses?
Oh, it's something that I talk about if anyone will listen at any time. I think it's just so important for us women to keep playing at these big venues. And, you know, it's just so amazing. The USGA, the RNA, and the PGA of America now are giving us opportunity to play at these big venues. It does so much to elevate the game, especially when we had back-to-back weeks at Pinehurst. That really elevated our tour. I think fans really enjoy watching the women play on courses that they recognize. It's just overall, it's just really great.
Michelle, busy time for you. NBA playoffs are going on. You've been traveling. What's your preparation been like? Are you joyfully grinding long days or short focused practice? How would you describe it?
It's kind of embarrassing. I said I was going to start practicing in March and life happens. And I said April and now I'm saying May and I realize it is now May. So yes, I will start grinding in 2 weeks. That'll happen. But yeah, it's been always interesting this time of the year with the NBA playoffs. You know, it's just not helpful having a husband that doesn't know his schedule going forward. But you know, it's the name of the game. It's a really exciting time. Go Dubs. They play tonight against the Lakers. So we're really excited about that. But yeah, it's an interesting time. It's hard to, you know, make plans and whatnot, but thankfully we have a really great support system, you know, with my in-laws and my parents are going to come over soon. So yeah, I'm going to start grinding.
You're obviously not competing much anymore, Michelle, only a couple of events in the last couple of years. How do you prepare for what is historically the toughest challenge in all of golf in the U.S. Women's Open? Is there any chance we're going to see you try to compete to get in a couple of reps before the Open at Pebble?
Unfortunately, probably not. I am hosting an event this year at Liberty National, the Mizuho Americas Open, but won't be teeing it up there. But yeah, I'm hoping that it's like riding a bike all over again. And I know it's in there and I just have to bring it out, do some drills, make sure my wedge distance and iron distances are on point. And I'm just going to go out here and have fun. I know I play my best golf when I have fun. So that's, you know, what I'm going to focus on.
Do you have expectations going into the week versus what you would have had when you were playing more regularly on the tour?
I think expectations, I don't really have expectations. I have the desire to win. I have the desire to, you know, play really well. You know, expectation wise, you know, it's going to be a really special week. My parents will be here. My husband will be on the bag. And you know, my daughter will be here and I think a couple of friends and, you know, I think, you know, maybe more of my family. So, you know, it's just going to be a really special week for me. I'm extremely excited to have my husband on the bag. It's the first time ever. So it's going to be exciting and interesting all at the same time. But, you know, I'm really looking forward to the week.
Michelle, you have played so much golf since childhood. You've hit countless golf balls. You made your pro debut at 16, the old Samsung out in the California desert. You've had these incredible highs and lows. In what ways has it made it easier to transition into other things away from a life inside the ropes?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Transitioning away from playing, definitely going through / went through an identity crisis. You know, playing was my identity. You know, golfer was always at the top of the line in the bio, and now it's, you know, it's changed. You know, my first priority is being a mother. Second, now I guess not playing in tournaments, I can't, you know, really say golfer anymore. So there's been a big shift in identity, something that I am still going through. But, you know, I'm very happy with my life right now. I have an incredible family and, you know, all the things that I have time to be able to do now, you know, working with the USGA and the RNA and, you know, hosting my own event, you know, really trying to help the next generation has been a big happy factor for me.
It sounds like you've managed to fill that void from competitive golf, Michelle, but do you miss competing? Do you miss being in there when the cut and thrust of a tournament is coming down to the wire?
Yeah, you know, when I watch golf, I, you know, definitely do miss competing. I miss my friends out on tour, you know, but I don't miss the traveling as much, I have to say, if I'm being completely honest. You know, the travel was tough. The travel, you know, so it's been, you know, really nice to wake up in my own bed and, you know, wake my daughter up every morning, or I guess most mornings. They still do travel a little bit. But yeah, it's just, I do miss it. At the same time, I guess I kind of don't. You know, I think that I know I made the right decision and, you know, I'm extremely happy where I am right now.
You were hampered during your career by so many injuries. Have you finally gotten to a point where your body has had time to heal?
Yeah, you know, I feel great not playing. My wrists feel great. You know, as soon as I pick up the club again, things start to hurt again, which I know I'm going to have to, you know, focus on, you know, getting ready because grind mode is on. So, you know, definitely going to try to keep up with my physical therapy and, you know, all of that moving forward.
Michelle, you said you accomplished two of your goals in life, graduating from Stanford and winning the U.S. Women's Open. I know at one time playing in the Masters was on that list as well. And you came kind of close, 05, 06, the Pub Links. I know you went last month for the first time. What was that experience like for you?
Yeah, you know, wanting to play the Masters has always been a big dream of mine. And I went to the Masters for the first time this year, and it was incredible. I was on a mission, though. I was on a mission to find a squirrel and did not find a squirrel. But I did try all the sandwiches. So that was a win for me. And the ice cream sandwich was definitely a win. But I had the best time. Not having a phone on me for 5 hours gave me anxiety, but you know, I survived. I survived that. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, it's immaculate. And the thing that shocked me the most was the undulation of the golf course. You know, I've seen it on TV so many times and, you know, you hear commentators talk about the undulation of the course or the greens and all of that, but that was what really shocked me when I first saw the golf course.
Were you team egg salad sandwich or pimento cheese?
Oh, come on. Egg salad all the way. I mean, unpopular opinion probably, but I would much rather eat an egg salad sandwich than a pimento. But can we be team ice cream sandwich? Is that?
Oh, always.
Okay.
That was always my guilty pleasure there as well. I'm ashamed to admit it. Michelle, when you talked about having your family there and your in-laws there, your daughter there, your husband on the bag at Pebble, it starts to sound like it's a farewell. Do you see yourself playing another Women's Open after this one?
I don't know. You know, RIV is kind of tempting, I have to say. But, yeah, I think this might be the farewell for now. I'm not closing any doors, definitely. But, yeah, most likely a farewell.
Well, if you are going out, I'm hearing there's like this bobblehead doll that's going to be passed out to some of the fans. You know what I'm talking about?
Hold, please.
Okay.
Kabam.
Wow. She bobbled. And it's tall like Wheezy in holding the U.S. Women's Open Trophy.
Yeah, they did a really good job. You know, all the little glove in the back pocket, too. That's a nice touch.
Not tabletopping, though.
That would have been an awkward bobblehead, let's be real.
Well, Michelle, you've given us so many wonderful moments in the game. Enjoy the run-up to Pebble Beach, and thanks so much for the time today.
Thank you, guys.
Well, we're going to move a couple of hours up the California coast from Pebble Beach all the way up to TPC Harding Park to check in with another of the world's best players at the International Crown on the LPGA Tour. You'll find out who that is coming up next. We have three of the LPGA Tour's brightest stars on Golf Today. Ataya Titikun and Minji Lee, the reigning U.S. Women's Open champion, join us from San Francisco, where they're competing in the International Crown. While another Women's Open champion, Paula Creamer, will talk to us from Media Day at Pebble Beach, site of this year's U.S. Women's Open. That's all coming up on Hour 2 of Golf Today, starting right now.
Golf Today.
Welcome back into Golf Today. Eamon Lynch alongside Damon Hacken. Damon, we just got done talking to Michelle Wee from Pebble Beach. How refreshing is it to see an athlete walk away and look as though she's in such a good place in her life?
Comfortable in her skin, and someone who was on the stage so young, so early, with a lot of pressure, eyeballs, competing against the men, turning pro at 16 and competing out in California desert with the likes of Annika and these big names. And just see her life full circle now as a mom, happy businesswoman, still involved in the game, hosting an event in Jersey City at Liberty National. It's just nice to see her life kind of come full circle.
We've seen so many times over the years people try to use Michelle Wee as a cautionary tale of injuries and underachieving versus this enormous talent that was out there. What she is now is aspirational for people in this game. When you have a career and it has the demands and the high-profile public life, to end up as centred and as contented as she is at this point in life, I think is a testament to her.
She points a lot to that Stanford education and degree as well. You know, Michelle,
they didn't let you into Stanford.
No, my sister got it. I did not. I imagine that. Yeah. You know, Michelle, we did also play in the International Crown back in 2018. And this week, the LPGA Tour has the International Crown once again. TPC Harding Park is the site not too far from Stanford. In San Francisco, a biennial match play competition consists of 32 players from 8 countries. You can catch live first round coverage Thursday, 6 p.m. Eastern time, right here on Golf Channel. And one of the toughest teams, I'm going to say it right now, Team Thailand. Ataya Titikun, Rookie of the Year, former world number one. The Bruin and Major Champ, Patty Tavatanakit. And the Jutanagarn sisters, Aria, former world number one. Moria winner on the LPGA Tour. And I believe we have Ataya, two-time LPGA winner, joining us right now from San Francisco. Ataya, it is great to see you. You know, you four have done a wonderful job to get to this point, but what kinds of things will you do off the course in terms of dinners and bonding with your teammates in San Francisco this week?
We didn't do much. I mean, like, I got here on, like, yesterday. We've been to the players' dinner, and then we just go out and eat all the good stuff and Asian food, of course. And, we just hang out around. Didn't do anything special, but we're going to go to escape room.
Ataya, you've played a lot of team golf in your career earlier. Do you enjoy that kind of format, or are you happier playing as an individual?
I kind of enjoy. I mean, like, I think we don't have many chances to, you know, like, play as a team much, and then it's kind of nice to be out, like, you know, like, from individual that you play alone and then kind of strip through sometime. I think team event is just kind of fun, and then we can enjoy it. And I think I prefer team more than individual.
Ataya, you've quickly become known for your great play, but also your smile, your attitude. How much does your joy and happiness translate to great golf in your mind?
I mean, I try. I think I kind of like this type of person who, like, happy all the times, and I had a lot of energy in myself. So I'm trying to, you know, like, to do my best out there to be enjoying and to be smile to all the fans, all the people who are watching us playing golf. Because I think if the most I enjoyed it, the most the fan enjoyed to watch us play too.
Ataya, you were very close to getting a major championship a couple of weeks ago at the Chevron Championship until the last couple of holes. Have you been able to put that disappointment behind you since then?
I mean, it's kind of disappointing, I would say, for in a fact, but like, I think at the same time, it's kind of like, oh, I think everything happened for a reason. Maybe I don't deserve it to get that trophy, but like, next time, maybe like the next tech majors, I have so many chances to, you know, so many majors to come into my life, and then I think maybe my time will come soon, and then hopefully next time I'm gonna do better than the last time, and then lift that trophy though.
Atiyah, the trees are moving, your hair is blowing, you got long sleeves, looks a little chilly. Yeah. Right now in San Francisco, what are the challenges of playing good golf when the temperatures are a little bit chilly?
Yeah, it's so chilly and it's so freezing in the morning. We play early morning today and it's so freezing. The golf course here, yeah, it's pretty nice, and then I think it's the fairway, it's pretty narrow, so I'm trying to, you know, we're trying to get the strategy, who's going to play with, who's going to compete together, and then I think keep the ball on the fairway. It's a big key for this event.
Atiyah, you finished no worse than eighth in the last four major championships. We've just talked to Michelle Wee up at Pebble Beach, looking forward to the U.S. Women's Open this year. Have you played Pebble Beach, or what are your aspirations for that week?
I haven't played at the Pebble Beach before, but I would love to, you know, practice this once or twice before the tournament gonna start. But I think it's gonna be really amazing and then really enjoy week for us to play an amazing week. I don't know if LPGA have hosted in Pebble Beach before, but I think this one gonna be a big event for us, and then I think it's the most event that we are all looking forward to play there.
Well, you'll probably be able to bring that long sleeve shirt to Pebble Beach as well. Atiyah, thanks so much for your time. Best of luck to Team Thailand this week.
Thank you so much.
All right, great visiting with a young, great player. Keeping the LPGA theme, let's take a look at who's in the race to the CME Globe. At this point in the season, there you see Atiyah Titikon at number 9. Lilia Vu fresh off that major championship at the Woodlands down in Houston, number 1. Nelly Korda, number 2 on the list. All those roads leading to Naples, Florida for the season ender at the CME Group Tour Championship. And later in the show, a past U.S. Open champion from 2010 is going to join us for a past champs chat. Paula Creamer, who won back in 2010 at Oakmont. What's the state of her game? Find out next.
Welcome back to Golf Today. It's a big day in the women's game as the USGA hosts Media Day for the upcoming US Women's Open at iconic Pebble Beach. The championship will be contested July 6th through the 9th. Back in 2010, the US Women's Open was contested at Oakmont Country Club in Pennsylvania. Paula Creamer finished the week 4 shots ahead of Na Yun Choi and Suzanne Pedersen to win her first major championship. And that really was a cherry on top of an extraordinary career resume. She won the 2010 U.S. Women's Open, 10 career LPGA victories, the last coming in 2014 at the HSBC Women's World Championship, a 7-time member of the U.S. Solheim Cup team, and the 2005 LPGA Rookie of the Year. And we're pleased now to be joined by Paula Creamer from her home. Paula, let's go back to that 2010 at Oakmont. You grabbed the lead on Friday afternoon. You never let it go. What were the nerves like trying to hold on to win that first major championship?
Oh, goodness. They were definitely there, that's for sure. You know, I will say I had to play a lot of golf on the weekend because of the big rain delay that we had. So for me, I actually never slept, you know, on the Sunday of the morning when we woke up on that day. I still had to finish my Saturday round. So it was kind of an unusual way to win your first major. But my goodness, that golf course is by far one of the hardest golf courses I have ever played. You have to be so mentally into it on every single shot. You cannot let your guard down in at one moment of the round, or else you could, you know, easily make a double like that. So sleeping was always the most important part of the week, which is the hardest thing to do, I think. You know, trying to let your brain rest during those weeks, it's difficult.
One of the hardest golf courses in creation and one of the best. So as someone who's won a national championship at Oakmont, what's the value of the best women in the world having access to major championship golf at places like Pebble, Oakmont or Open at St. Andrews, for example?
Oh, I think it's great. My goodness, Oakmont by far to me was one of the hardest golf courses, like I said. And it's funny, I have not been back to play it since. I have no desire. I'm like, it's okay. I've completed what I wanted to do. I'm an honorary member, so I can go back whenever, but I just don't have that desire. Now, Pebble, you know, the old course, you know, golf courses like that, I would, you know, I want to go back and I want to keep defeating it and doing better. But for some reason, Oakmont, I'm like, that's okay. I'll see you in a couple years of the next U.S. Open.
You'd had 8 top 10 finishes in majors before that 2010 Open at Oakmont. Paula, were you feeling pressure to deliver on all of the promise back then?
Without a doubt. You know, I turned pro when I was 18. And then, you know, 3 years later, it was like, oh, you're the best player to have never won a major. And it's like, oh, what? how do you get labeled that so quickly? So I put so much pressure on myself in those majors. And I always came close. You know, I was always somewhere around, you know, the last 3 or 4 or 5 groups going into Sunday. But I could just never get the job done. So at Oakmont, you know, for me, it was like, okay, I'm sticking to a game plan. I'm not looking at a leaderboard. I am only doing what I can do. And then I ended up winning, you know, being the only person under par, and it worked that week. And then from there on, I was like, okay, I guess this is how you do it. Unfortunately, I haven't won since with that same game plan, but, you know, a lot goes into 1 week.
Well, Paul, you've dealt with some injuries the last several years, but by my eye anyway, the scores are starting to come down. It looks like things are coming together for you. How would you classify the state of your health and your game?
You know, I feel great. You know, even after having a Hilton, you know, she's 15 months now. I would say the biggest thing for me right now is just mentally balancing being a mom on tour and trying to compete against the best players in the world. You know, for my whole golf career, it's my 18th year, it's only been about me. And now I'm, you know, thinking about daycare, thinking about nap. Did I pack her enough food for her snacks? You know, do I need to let them, did I put enough diapers in the bag? You know, things like that, where I'm trying to get adjusted quickly to it, because that's, I think, the biggest thing for me. And Grant and I have worked really hard on my golf swing, and I'm starting to see it come back together out in tournaments. But, you know, mentally right now, I think that's my biggest feat that I need to kind of overcome and just get more comfortable out there and be confident in myself, and kind of take Paula Creamer, the golfer, and, you know, and it's hard to say to put mom on the side, but that's that balance that I'm fighting right now.
Paula, we just talked to Michelle Wee, who also a relatively new mother, and she said she's no longer a golfer. She's kind of found the balance by stepping away from the game. You're still out there playing. Do you still have the passion for it that you had earlier in life, even with all of the other commitments?
Without a doubt. I wouldn't put my family through this. I wouldn't, you know, put myself through that if I didn't believe in myself that I could go out and win again. You know, I love the game of golf. I love competing. I love trying to get better, but it is incredibly hard now. I will say, being just a mom in general and, you know, trying to, like I said, compete against the best players in the world. And I think expectations, I've had to kind of look at more and more, because, you know, my time out on the practice range is different than what it used to be. My time at a golf course when I'm on a tournament is different than what it used to be. And I have to be comfortable with that and know that I'm working hard and I'm striving for my goals, and I want to do it for myself, but I really want to do it for Hilton and my family as well. You know, I want to show that you can do both, but it is a process going through it, and there's been some ups and downs, but I definitely want to keep pursuing my golf career, and I love playing.
Paula, I contend that you've hit one of the greatest putts in the history of the game. Your last win, 2014, HSBC, 75-footer for Eagle to beat Atahara Munoz in a playoff. Christy Kerr, Morgan Pressel, Brittany Lang walked down the hill to congratulate you on this big breaking putt over a swell. What do you remember about this moment?
I mean, you can see it in my face, and it was like, holy cow, did that just really happen? I mean, in that instance, in that circumstance, you know, I'm just trying to two putt and, you know, make Atha make her birdie putt that she had. And, you know, it went in, and it's one of the greatest moments, I think, of my golf career. I would say right up there with, you know, winning the U.S. Open. and some of my Solheim Cup memories. But my goodness, I mean, it was shocking to me too. And I saw it and I was like, okay, this is looking pretty good. And like the direction that I was going was right towards, you know, Morgan and Christy and Langer was there. And it was like, it just all happened at once. And it was like one of the coolest moments that I've had. And, you know, another reason, you know, they tried to reenact that putt the next year at the Pro-Am party. And they're like, here, do you want to try it again? And I made it again. And I'm like, okay, that's it. Like, I don't ever, why do I need to keep doing this putt?
Just drop the mic right there. Paul, it's great catching up with you. Enjoy mamahood. Enjoy the rest of the season. And we'll speak to you down the road.
Thanks, guys. Thank you very much.
Continuing on Golf Today, the USGA is hosting Media Day at Pebble Beach as this year's US Women's Open will take place there July 6th through the 9th. Last year, the championship was contested on the East Coast at Pine Needles. In North Carolina, Minji Lee took the title over Mina Harige by 4 shots and in the process collected $1.8 million, the largest paycheck in women's golf history at the time. Minji Lee has won 8 times on the LPGA Tour, including those 2 major championships, the Amundi Evian Championship and that US Women's Open, competed in 2 Olympics for Australia and also won USGA title at the US Girls Junior back in 2012. And Minji Lee joins us now from the locker room at TPC Harding Park, where you're competing in the International Crown. Minji, I know you're not eligible for the Solheim Cup being an Australian, but you do have a lot of team experience. Do you enjoy competing in that format versus the kind of lone wolf that you are the rest of the year?
Yeah, actually, we just played 9 holes practice round and there was a lot of banter, a lot of sledging. It was a lot of fun.
Minji, how significant that one of your teammates, Hannah Green, is coming off a big win in Los Angeles on Sunday?
An advantage. I mean, I think all of us, we gel so well together. So regardless of which team we play in, I think we're going to have a good time. And obviously she's really informed. So hopefully she has a great week.
Australia doesn't have the best record in the International Crown, Minji, never having finished better than 6th. How optimistic are you that your team can change that this week?
Yeah, I mean, everybody has been playing so well and I think it's anybody's game at the moment. So hopefully we can turn it around and get better than 6th.
I have no doubt you will, Minji. How's your life changed since winning the U.S. Women's Open last year? More media requests, more eyeballs on you. How are things different?
Yeah, I mean, probably a little bit more media, but I think in terms of golf, not much has changed. Obviously, just have had a little bit more confidence in my game. But other than that, I still feel pretty normal and a lot more people just recognize me as a US Open champion.
After that US Open, Minji, you were 2nd in the Women's PGA Championship. You were 4th in the AIG Women's Open. Since then, your results have been a little bit mixed. Where are you in terms of your game right now?
Yeah, I mean, I just took 6 weeks off before the last 2 events. I just kind of felt like I needed a little bit of a break after going full throttle for 8 years. So, you know, I just don't want to be as tired come the end of the year. So I just took a little bit of a break and I feel good now.
Minji, the LPGA schedule has been a little bit scattered. Start, stop, play here, go there. How difficult is it to kind of build momentum, especially early in the season?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I just played Asia for the first 3 months. So it was only 2 weeks and trying to build momentum there was a little bit tough for me. So, you know, I'm trying to get back into the swing of things, but I feel like we have been traveling a bit more here and there, back and forth over the state. So hopefully we can get a few more events in the same place for next year. But I'm really grateful for such a full schedule.
It was announced this morning, Minji, that the US Women's Open at Pebble Beach will be the first one to have shot link data available for players and fans. And that kind of granular information, a lot of players at your level pay to have that done themselves because it's not really otherwise available in the women's game. Mm-hmm. How significant is that for elite women's players to suddenly have access to that kind of data?
I mean, I think obviously we have the KPMG stats, but nothing as I guess accurate as ShotLink. We've never had it before. I just think it would be good to see after the tournament the stats for after the event, and we can evaluate this. So I think it's really nice to be able to have that kind of information for us for the, I guess, the upcoming events, and see where we can get better and where we rank among the other players.
Minji, having a brother in professional golf, Minwoo, met him at the Players. He's not shy, likes the cameras. How do you balance the support, the love, and the trash talk as siblings?
Oh, I mean, I guess the trash talk never ends. But we're really supportive of each other, and I'm not much of a trash talker, so he's more of the cheeky one in our family. So, love is always there, and the cheekiness is also always there.
There's a lot of chatter this week, obviously, Minji, about Pebble Beach. The media day is going on there today. That's where you're going to be defending your title come July. Mm-hmm. How important is it for women's majors to be held on those most iconic golf courses?
I mean, yeah, I'm grateful that we get to go to these iconic places now, but it is a little bittersweet that it took this much time. But the USGA to put us on the rotation for Pebble, I think it's really great. And I've never been there, so I'm really looking forward to seeing the golf course.
It'll be fun to watch you try to go back-to-back, but that's for July. Best luck this week in San Francisco, Minji, in the International Crown.
Thank you.